translation. Sutta Goswami said, "Being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to King Yudhisthira on the subject of occupational duties. Bhishma Dev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this mortal world, and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material engagements. Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will, and his lying down in the bed of arrows was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. Was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. Sutu vacha iti bhita praja drohat sarva dharma vivitsaya tato vinashanam praga yatta deva vrato patat oma janatamanandasya gyananjana shalakaya chukshurandratan yanatasmaya shigurvena. Well, Bhishma Dev was the eldest member of the family. He was senior to Dhritarashtra, quite a bit senior also in the family. So he had taken a vow, this term Devavrata, refers to Bhishma Dev because he had taken a vow to not only to not take the throne for the sake of his father, but he also vowed that he would not have any children. And since he took such a vow, it meant that he would not have any association with women, because there was no question of associating with women without the intention of producing children. That is the Vedic culture. So Bhishma Dev remained a brahmachari his whole life as a kshatriya, which is very, very unusual for kshatriyas. Generally speaking, they are in the grihastha ashram, the occupation that they perform requires that they have some support, some association with the opposite sex to get energy for their fighting work and their defending. He was unique in this regard, that because generally speaking, if one is not going to enter into family life, then why should he be very much concerned about the country defending, fighting, these kinds of honors, holding the throne? This is all quite material. And if one is not even interested in maintaining a family, why should he maintain a kingdom? Generally we see those who are sannyasis or brahmacharis, they don't involve themselves. They involve themselves in the brahminical activities. trying to understand the nature of the soul and the spiritual world. They turn their attention to the other world. They leave the affairs as far as possible of this material world. They're fixing their minds. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pasyanti Suraya. Padam Padam means the supreme abode. They turn their attention, the sages. And Bhishmadev, not only was he a great warrior, he was the greatest warrior. He was called Grandfather Bhishma because of being so old. And he was the grandfather, or the great-grandfather, of the Pandavas as well as the Kurus. So he didn't have any favoritism as far as which side of the family. He was equal to all. And he just wanted that the planet should be ruled properly. That was his only intention. His desire was sincere. And he was very learned. He is considered one of the 12 Mahajans. Mahajan means great souls or great authorities in spiritual science. So, in the Battle of Kurukshetra, he took the side of Duryodhana. There are different reasons for this. One reason may be that ultimately it was part of his way of pleasing Krishna. Because his relationship with the Lord was in the mood of servitorship mixed with chivalry, vira. There are five direct relationships that one may have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and seven indirect. And so one of the indirect relationships is chivalry, a kind of a competitive fighting against the Lord. Because the Lord, he likes to fight. That tendency is there. He likes a good fight. But he especially likes to post one of his great devotees in that position. So he's fighting with a devotee. Just like a king, sometimes king says, "All right, I want to have some wrestling match." So they bring in one of the wrestlers, one of the big professional wrestlers, and the king wrestles with him. He doesn't just go to the prison and pick out one of the criminals to an ordinary person. No, one of the faithful wrestlers are engaged in that way. So, there's no one who can actually fight against Krishna. It's not possible. But still, for his own pleasure, sometimes devotees are engaged in that way. And that's one reason. Another reason was that Bhishma Dev was being maintained by Duryodhana during the exile of the Pandavas. Well, he was given very nice facilities and royal treatment and all of everything. So he thought, now that there's time for battle, or there's some war, how can I go to the other side? I've been maintained all these years by Duryodhana. This won't look very good. This is not dharma. Of course, from a material point of view, that was a fair analysis. But from other views, it would have been dharma also for him
to leave and take the side of Arjuna, Krishna, Yudhisthira. Nevertheless, he took the side of Duryodhana and fought against the Pandavas, but he knew that Krishna and Arjuna cannot be defeated. There's no possibility of their being defeated because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew that. Krishna was his worshipful Lord. In the battle, Duryodhana criticized Bhishma Dev one time. He was the commander-in-chief of his army. And he said, my dear grandfather, I think you're not fighting up to your full capacity because you have some affection for the Pandavas, therefore you're taking it easy on them. Bhishma Dev said, oh, you think so? Yes, I think so. He said, all right. Here, these five arrows, I will kill the five Pandavas tomorrow. Does that make you happy? He said, yes, very happy. And so, Duryodhana said, better let me hold on to those arrows till tomorrow for safekeeping. He said, okay, as you wish. So he gave the five arrows to Duryodhana. Duryodhana was in ecstasy. He had the five arrows, and Bhishma Dev had made this vow. And everyone knew that when Bhishma Dev makes a vow, that's it. Because he had made this vow that he would never take the throne, that he would never marry, and he kept it all these years. The throne had passed over several times, and never would he take the throne. And never would he marry. He had so many opportunities. Even that, was it Amba? She wanted to marry him. One of the beautiful princesses, and he refused, and she decided that she would perform austerities to kill him. Still, he would not change his vow. His mother, Satyavati, begged him to please give some children to keep the dynasty going. He said, no, mother, I took this vow for your benefit, for my father, I will not. So everyone knew that when Bhishma Dev made a vow, Devavrata means godly vow, when he made this vow, that was it. So now he said, these five arrows, I will kill the Pandavas. Duryodhana was overjoyed. He went home, went to his tent. They all had tents because they were at the battlefield of Kurukshetra. There were no buildings, because it was just a big field. Otherwise, you can still go there. Kurukshetra is a real place. It's not figurative. Well, Kurukshetra is the body, the Pandavas are the five senses, Krishna is the mind. No, this is a imaginative interpretation you'll find. Everyone uses Bhagavad Gita to give their own philosophy. And they give some interpretation. Some psychologist says that Krishna is actually just a psychologist, and this is a psychological exercise, and there's no such thing as Kurukshetra. No. There's a real place. You can go there. Kurukshetra exists today. The big field. That's where the battle took place. So, they had their tents. They were all staying in tents. But there was a principle, according to Vedic Kshatriya fighting, that although during the day they were enemies, at night they could be friends and they could even have dinner together and have discussions. It wasn't like as soon as one would see the other at night that they would shoot each other or kill each other. No. They were friends. Oh, come in, friend. Ah. How's everything? So, Krishna went to Arjuna and said, Arjuna, You remember once Duryodhana promised you a benediction. And Arjuna remembered, because once Duryodhana was fighting and he was being defeated horribly by some Gandharvas, if I'm not mistaken. And Arjuna, although he was not bound to, he decided to protect his cousin brother. And he did so, and he drove away the opposite party and saved Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was so thankful, he offered, he said, "My dear Arjuna, I will give you any benediction you like. Just ask me anything, I'll give to you." And Arjuna said, "I don't need anything right now, but in the future, if I need, I'll ask you." So Krishna reminded him, "Now remember that promise. This is the time. You go to Duryodhana and you ask him for those 5 arrows. So Arjuna said, "Yes." So he went there, and Duryodhana received him. "Oh yes, Arjuna, brother, please come in. Sit down. Be comfortable. Would you like something to eat?" "No, no." "So what have you come for? What have you?" Arjuna said, "Do you remember that benediction you promised me?" "Yes, I'm prepared. Whatever you like. If you want the kingdom without fighting, I'm prepared to give it to you immediately." For Duryodhana, this is amazing. He was a Kshatriya. He was ready to keep his vow. He had made the promise and he was going to keep it. And he would have actually given him the kingdom without fighting. But that wasn't the instruction. This is an important point. When we're given some instruction by higher authorities, it doesn't mean that we should take some other direction. Because here he would have thought, he could have said, "You're willing to give me the whole kingdom without fighting? I'm sure Krishna would like that. So why don't I take that?" Should he have done that? It would have solved all the problem. Nobody would have been killed. The battle would have been over. He would have gotten the kingdom. He could have reasoned like that. He could have thought, "This is solved the whole problem. I'm sure Krishna will be pleased." But no, Arjuna's a great devotee, because he knew, "Krishna told me to come there and get 5 arrows. He didn't tell me to ask for the kingdom without fighting." So Arjuna didn't speculate. "Well, I think, perhaps, maybe." No. He executed that order. "Krishna told me to come back with 5 arrows. That's it." So even when he was offered the greatest thing, to have the whole kingdom without fighting, he refused. "No, thank you. Let us fight. But there is one thing I need, and that is those 5 arrows. So Duryodhana thought, "How did he know about these 5 arrows? Only Bhishma Dev and I knew this." "All right." And he gave the 5 arrows. Because he had made the promise. That's a Kshatriya. So Arjuna came back with the 5 arrows. Krishna was very happy. Bhishma Dev was not very happy. When Bhishma Dev found out, he said, "Ah, this is Krishna, that cunning Krishna." He said, "He has made me break my promise. All right, so I'll make him break his promise." His promise was, Krishna made a promise, he would not take up arms, he would not fight. He said, "If he doesn't fight tomorrow, I will kill his beloved Arjuna. Otherwise, he'll have to break his promise." So Bhishma Dev made another vow. His first vow was spoiled by Krishna. Now he made another vow that I will make Krishna break his promise. Otherwise his beloved Arjuna will be killed. So the fight went on, and Bhishma Dev was fighting like he was unstoppable. He was just possessed. He was going after Arjuna. Everything, killing everything in sight to get to Arjuna. And once he got to Arjuna, he broke his chariot. Arjuna was off the chariot. He lost everything. He didn't have any weapons. He was finished. He was about to be killed by Bhishma Dev. There was nothing left to do. Krishna jumped off the chariot, whatever was left. He picked up the chariot, broken chariot wheel, and he attacked Bhishma Dev to protect Arjuna. And Bhishma Dev, yes. Yes, go ahead, kill me if you like. Because he was not afraid of death. Bhishma Dev was a pure devotee of Krishna. And he wanted to see the Lord attacking him. That was his rasa. So the Lord was attacking with his hair and his cloth falling off, covered with dust, with the wheel, and Bhishma Dev, yes, come. But just then the fighting stopped for the day, and Krishna did not actually kill Bhishma Dev. But Bhishma Dev had fulfilled his vow. Yes, you broke your promise. You said you wouldn't pick up weapons, and I made you pick up weapons to save your Arjuna. So for that reason, Krishna is famous. That even if it means breaking his own vow or his own promise to protect his devotees, he's prepared to break his own vow. That is Krishna's most important statement. And therefore he told Arjuna, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati, that you may declare boldly, Arjuna. The reason he asked Arjuna to declare it is because sometimes Krishna has to break his own promise. But he will not break the promise of his devotees, that my devotees shall always be protected. But anyway, Bhishma Dev ultimately was defeated. Mostly Arjuna was the one who was defeating him. But finally, they put this lady, who formerly was a princess, and there was some mix-up because she was supposed to marry Chittavirya, but she was already betrothed to Salva, and then she went back to Shalva. Bhishma Dev sent her back, so you go back and marry Shalva. Shalva rejected her, said, you've been away from home, I won't accept you. So she came back, and then Bhishma Dev wouldn't accept, no one would accept her. So she decided that she was going to perform severe austerities so she could take birth in her next life, Shikhandi, and be a fighter that could kill Bhishma Dev. So sure enough, she took birth as Shikhandi, and Shikhandi had one meditation: I'm going to kill Bhishma Dev. That was all he was thinking about. He was a male. And a great fighter too. Not just an ordinary fighter, but extraordinary fighter. But his whole meditation was. So now the time had come, and Shikhandi had taken the side of the Pandavas, and so they put... And there was one thing that Bhishma Dev, he knew all this. He knew who Shikhandi was in his previous life. Was her before. And he thought, how could I fight with this man? He used to be a woman. I'm not going to fight. So whenever Shikhandi would come on the battlefield, Bhishma Dev would just turn away. He would just turn his face. He wouldn't even look at him. So therefore, the Pandavas knew, so they used to put Shikhandi up in the front when attacking Bhishma Dev, because Bhishma Dev wouldn't look at him. So ultimately, it was Shikhandi and the others who defeated Bhishma Dev. But still, he wouldn't die because he had received the benediction from his father, Shantanu. His father was Shantanu and Ganga. Mother Ganges was his mother. So he had received a benediction because of taking that vow to remain brahmachari. His father said, I give you the benediction that you shall only die when you wish to die. Otherwise, nothing can force you to die. And well, now his body was filled with so many arrows. Is it full of arrows, and he was lying on this bed of arrows. But he wasn't dying. Why? Because he was waiting for several things. One, he was waiting for the auspicious moment. Because according to Bhagavad Gita, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that those who leave when the sun is in the northern hemisphere during the light at an auspicious moment, they don't come back, such yogis. So although Bhishma Dev could have left any time, because he was a devotee of Krishna, he didn't have to worry about such mechanical arrangements, still, he wanted to make everything auspicious. So he was waiting for that most auspicious moment, the perfect time when the sun was just... And he was a yogi, so he knew all these things. Great yogi. Great learned scholar. And also, he gave the opportunity by Krishna's arrangement for Yudhisthira to come and inquire from him about his duty, because Yudhisthira was overwhelmed, as we've been reading. And this gave the opportunity for Krishna to come, and he could meditate upon Krishna personally at the last stage. And so many sages and saintly persons came and got his association. It is very auspicious to have the association of such a saintly person when he's about to leave the world. Therefore, they all came from all over the universe. We'll read in a few verses. We'll see. Such great personalities came. Parvat Muni, Narad Muni, Domya, Vyas, so many came just to see, to be in the association. These are some of the pastimes of Krishna and his devotees. Shantanu, he was married to Ganga, the Ganges personified. But she had a particular mission. Her job was, one of her jobs was to liberate the Vasus, who had made some offense, and now they had fallen down to the earth. But they had been given the benediction that as soon as they were born, they would get liberation. And so it was her job, as soon as she gave birth to these children, she would throw them into the Ganges and they would drown. And so Shantanu had made a promise that he could not ask her any questions why she was doing anything. He just had to accept it. Otherwise she would leave him. So he was tolerating this, four sons, one after the other. And finally the fifth son was Bhishma. And she was preparing to throw him, and Shantanu said, "What are you doing, you crazy woman? Why are you killing all these children?" And then Ganga said, "Yes, all right. So you can have this son, but I'm going back, I'm leaving now, as I said, goodbye." She left. So Bhishma was raised by Shantanu, but he was feeling, you know, he was a king. So once he saw this beautiful Satyavati, the daughter of a fisherman, and she was so beautiful that he fell in love with her. And he wanted to have her as his wife. But the fisherman was very shrewd fisherman. "Father," he said, "there's some conditions. If you want to have my daughter as your wife, that's okay, but the son that is produced will be the king, will be the emperor." And Shantanu said, "Well, how is that possible? I already have a son, Bhishma Dev. He will be the king." He said, "Okay, that's my condition." So Shantanu left, and he didn't agree to that condition. But he was morose, all the time. And Bhishma Dev found out why he was morose. And then he went and made this agreement with the fisherman that he would not marry and he would not have any sons and he would not take the throne if the daughter could be given to his father. So that was the agreement. Any other questions? Why such violence? Well, of course, only the Lord can understand his own mind, why he should choose such a extraordinary situation to instruct us in Dharma. But one thing is that he chose a devotee like Arjuna, because Arjuna ultimately was agreeable to the Lord and would agree to do the Lord's wish. And that would glorify Arjuna. And it was wonderful because Arjuna, being a devotee and being so kind-hearted, he was against the fight. He didn't want to engage in such violence, just like you're thinking, why so much violence? So, if someone likes violence and doesn't care about Dharma, then it wouldn't be a very good person to speak with. But Arjuna presented all the good reasons. Therefore, by Krishna speaking Arjuna to defeat his arguments, he was defeating all morality, all material conceptions, every possible argument that could have been presented in favor of nonviolence. And that's why it's somewhat ironic that one politician has used Bhagavad Gita to propound nonviolence, although, as you pointed out, Krishna was recommending that he fight, and he did fight. So how he could use the Bhagavad Gita to prove nonviolence is questionable. Not questionable, there's no question. Because Krishna was saying, no, you must fight. And but for the right cause also. Because Arjuna was pure his whole life. He never performed any sinful activities. And Krishna was personally there, and he had to eliminate all these unwanted kshatriyas, because it's stated in the Mahabharata that many demoniac persons had taken the position of kings, and they were causing disturbances. So that was another reason to establish Yudhisthira on the throne. And for righteousness, that things should be done properly. That to show that if someone doesn't follow the scriptural injunctions, that he should not prosper. And the sons of Dhritarashtra were evil from the very beginning. They did so many evil things. They tried to kill the Pandavas when they were young. They usurped the throne. They insulted Draupadi. Everything else may have been tolerated. Krishna was very tolerant, but that was too much. That such a chaste woman as Draupadi should be brought into the arena and stripped naked in front of such an unheard of thing in Vedic culture. And not only that, but so many great personalities were present there. And they allowed it to go on. Only Krishna stopped it. So this was too much. Too many things. He personally went to try to stop the battle. And Duryodhana would not accept. So, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskitam. Krishna says, I come to reestablish the principles of religion, to protect the devotees, and to annihilate the miscreants. So these were miscreants, and they needed to be annihilated. This was his program. It's like pulling out weeds. If you have to grow some plant, then you have to pull out some weeds. So these weeds had to be pulled out. And now Bhagavad Gita stands without any... There can be no question about what is the highest principle. Because otherwise someone might think that nonviolence is the highest principle, as was presented by a politician. He was saying that nonviolence is the highest principle. Buddha also taught ahimsa paramo dharmo, the highest principle of dharma. Because he also came from the Vedic culture. He taught nonviolence. But that's not Krishna's instruction. Krishna doesn't say nonviolence is the highest principle. What's the highest principle? Yes, the highest principle is to surrender to Krishna. Whether he says hinsa or ahimsa, it doesn't matter. If Krishna says to fight and perform violence, then that's the highest principle. It's not that, no, non-violence is a higher principle. So this is the eternal truth. And there are so many examples of this. You have to surrender to Krishna, whatever he wants. Because we have to have faith that what Krishna wants is good for everyone. It's perfect. Violence we think is bad. We have this conception of violence being bad, but nobody minds violence. If you're attacked by a gang of thugs who are going to cut off your head, if the police come and beat them up, you're very happy. Isn't it? Isn't it? That violence you like. Or if you have some cancer and the physician, the surgeon, he cuts out the cancer. Oh, that violence you appreciate. Thank you. You thank those officers for coming and saving you from the gang. So violence is good when it's properly directed. Otherwise, violence is bad. It's not good or bad. It depends on... And in Krishna's hands, violence is perfect. Because he is the supreme father of all living entities. And if he has to punish one of his children, that's also good for them. No, but there's always people who do it. There's always people who eat fish. Somehow or other people eat fish. Even in Bengal now, if you go, even Jagannath Puri, people eat fish. They're not supposed to eat fish. But especially in Kali Yuga, it was very rare in the former age. But we can see even still there were people who ate fish. We learned from the Bhagavatam that who was that king? He was eating fish and he kept there was one lady there, and she was formerly the wife of Pradumna. So, Rati. So, she was somehow or other kept there, and she was preparing dal, but they were also making fish. So one day the fish was caught, and inside the fish there was a little baby, and so she took charge of the baby, and it turned out that this was Pradumna again, had come in this way. So she ultimately married him. But some of these demoniac persons, they ate fish. And it's not very clean and not very sattvic. It's in the mode of ignorance. But there's always people in the mode of ignorance. They like to eat these things. So it's better to eat fish than cows. At least by eating fish, one is not burdened with such great sinful reactions as eating cows. That is the worst. One who eats cows, because then he's directly disobeying the Vedic injunctions. But fish eating is just low class. Okay, thank you very much. Krandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.